you never heard of.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
That's right. Podcast for the people, by the people.
There we go.
Still on the tour.
Still in Crofton.
Yeah.
Crofton episode 2.
Okay, we're going to go chronologically.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that what they say?
Or I don't know. I guess it depends on how you put it out. Maybe this is episode 1 or 3 or
no, something. I like that. I think stories should have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and just stay in that order.
Sounds good to me. So we're in the Crofton Haymarket. If we put these out in that order, last week we were in the Pulley Museum.
Pulley Museum.
So now we're in the Haymarket, sitting out back on the patio, legendary patio.
Yes.
We got a little bit of smoke in the air. It's smelling good.
It does. Like if you weren't hungry, you're hungry now.
100%. I'm looking at, in front of me, a beautiful pizza oven. Looking forward to lunch.
Yeah, I can hear it crackling.
Yeah. Yeah, the sounds and everything. Yep. Yeah. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Doug, who we spoke with and his wife are kind of getting something set up for us here today. So good deal. Yeah. Having some fun out here. So this afternoon we're sitting down with Jeff and Jolene Steffen. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
Awesome. It's a beautiful day.
It is. It is.
Beautiful spring weather.
This is probably a needed but maybe not wanted break in the middle of planting season.
Well, we need to have forced breaks.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I mean. Yeah. Yeah.
Keep everything in perspective.
Yep. How long have you been planting? When did you start?
Well,
I mean this year.
Yeah, you know, a third of our farm is to, you know, early crops that we grow for seed. So we've been planting since March 28th, probably.
Okay.
A lot of that stuff is up. But it's corn and beans this week.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So local farmers, how long have you folks lived here?
We were married 41 years this year. So I'm from Crofton. Lived here all my life.
Okay.
Do I have to say how old I am?
You don't have to.
Oh, okay. I graduated from Crofton High School in 1980, and Jeff, nearby town, he went to Hardington Cedar Catholic and graduated in 79. So, but his address was Fordyce. I moved 11 miles away from where I grew up. So I have definitely always been from Crofton.
Nice.
So we've been on the same farm place for 41 years.
Wow.
Basically, yeah.
Is it family, like, was it passed down through generations, or you guys first?
No, we purchased it in the 80s during the farm crisis.
Okay.
So
great time to get in.
We stayed home and worked for 10 years. So.
Yeah.
We learned how to put it all together and work hard and get it paid for. So, and we wouldn't change a thing looking
back. So, yeah. You mentioned, I'm just trying to put the timeline together. You mentioned graduating in 80.
Married in 84.
Okay. And then you guys bought the farm?
It was my brother and I, we purchased the farm
probably
like in 1982.
82.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 82, yep. Okay.
And then it became a part of a family operation, you know. And I still work with him, but this farm is ours.
Gotcha. No. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Cool deal. What attracted you to that? I mean, how did you decide we're going to be farmers?
I grew up on a farm. He grew up on a farm.
Well, okay.
No, I wasn't sure
what we know.
I wasn't sure what I was going to do. You know, it was my dream to live along a nice creek with wildlife and everything.
Yeah.
And then this came up, and
And our dream came, his dream came true, but we live along a creek with wildlife, meaning it's hard to raise a garden, trees, crops with all the wildlife.
Right, yeah.
Entertaining it.
Yeah.
So do you guys hunt then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so we consume our wildlife also.
Right on.
Yeah, we feel we deserve to eat a little venison that scrapes on our trees and
there's deer and turkey right on the place a lot of times, and
we don't eat the beaver or the
they're part of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Wait, is that good?
beaver?
No, I just
can you eat that?
I just know we have a lot of beaver along our creek
but
that
do
you know gnaws
that?
A tree down when you plant it.
I mean, you can eat anything, but yeah. I mean, last night and they were talking about putting together some wild game feed or something, and somebody was specifically talking about bringing beaver.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Steve Ranella has eaten beaver.
Oh, if yeah, he, if you yeah, watch yeah, that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Have you had that, Andy?
No.
But isn't there something with their tail, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I just know their pelts are very valuable. They used to be a kind of the pinnacle of the fur trade.
Oh. And that's when I was a kid, and that was my spending money as we trapped creeks.
Oh, nice.
For mink, muskrat, beaver. And we still have all those fur bears, you know, within 100 yards of our house. Wow. We have all the major fur bears yet.
Very cool.
Morgan, if you want to try beaver, just come on down and you guys can hunt.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just wonder how it's cooked. Tastes like chicken, right? If you bread it.
It probably tastes like muddy water and tree bark.
I'm sure it's a dark red.
Yeah.
Put them on some maple trees before.
Yeah.
Like how you finish cattle.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that. You mentioned when you were a kid, you know, trapping and those kinds of things. So let's talk a little bit about how you guys came up. You mentioned growing up around here. Is this where you were born and raised, or did you say Hardington? Or?
I'm 5 miles from where I grew up.
Okay.
But I was in the next school district.
Okay.
And so I went to school in Hardington. But yeah, right now we're living 5 miles from where I grew up.
Did your parents farm?
Yes. And the homesteaders that homesteaded this area is just down the road, too. So,
okay.
I mean, there's a lot of history there.
You're going to find a lot of Steffens in this area.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, it's definitely a name I've heard before. Are you related to the auction group? Isn't there an auction group that's Steffens?
Steffies, you're probably thinking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This must be something similar. Yeah.
Oh, your guys' name is on the filling station, or it was.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And is that a relative of yours?
They all come from the homesteader.
Yeah.
If you look back, they had a big family and so
they bailed me out one day. I had a flat tire on a gravel road right outside of town, and they helped me out and got me back. And
nice, yeah. Nice. So when you were growing up, and you said your family was farming, did you help with the family farm?
Yes.
You and your kid. And did you enjoy it, or did you just want to get away from it, or what was the thought for you?
You know, I enjoyed it. I didn't know if there was going to be a place for me.
Uh-huh.
I went to college for industrial business management, you know, and I thought that would probably be the path I would take. But this opportunity came up. This farm came for sale, you know, and timing is everything. You know, it happened to be the wrong timing, but we made it work.
Where'd you go to school? College?
Wayne State College.
Okay.
Wayne, Nebraska.
Wildcats.
Yes. So I played a little football there too.
What did you immediately come back home after college, or did you do something else?
I met Jolene the second year I was in college, so then I was home a lot after that. And I was engaged. We were engaged before I was out of college, so we got married. I graduated from college in 83.
Okay.
And then we moved to the farm in 84. Mm-hmm. So
luckily he found a farm girl that loved the farm life. And we worked together, and we still do everything together.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about how you came up. You grew up around here in Crofton?
Yeah, just 4 miles north of here.
Okay. And your family was farmers as well?
Yes. Yep. I have 4 brothers that farm in the area.
Yeah. Way of life.
Yep.
So those early years, talking about, you know, there was a farming crisis going on in the early 80s. I saw this sign, it just says stuck with me, and it was in a cute little area, a nice little farm right down the road, and it said something to the effect of, behind every good farmer is a wife that has a job in town.
Oh, no.
Did you have a job in town?
I did. Yeah. I worked in publishing and for 10 years. Once our daughter was born in 86, I went part-time. But I always came home. I remember coming home from work and milking cows and going over to his brother's place. I had that job before I met, before we got married.
And that was the early years. We've been both self-employed ever since.
Yeah.
So I always like to joke, you know, a farmer married an artist, there's two stable sources of income for him.
I did a lot of ad work, working for, well, the Missouri Valley Shopper, eventually the Weekly Observer paper, and then South Dakota Magazine, okay. Which is a wonderful yeah. publication. And yeah. I got so much education there working. Had great mentors. Bernie Hanoff, I'm going to mention his name because he had a big part of helping me become, if I'm anywhere as professional in anything. I learned it somewhere along the way. But yeah, and then we lost two children after our first daughter was born. But anyway, and that that's when Jeff just said, how about you focus on your art? And so I quit, you know, my position in Yankton where I worked, and I started painting. And yeah, that's 30 some years ago. So a lot has happened along the way.
Well, and if anyone could see on, if they're watching the video, this, do you call this a mural?
Yeah, do you call it largest painting. Really.
Okay, your largest painting is behind us. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. I was looking at it earlier when we were setting up, and I was standing back here, and the sun was coming over, and I literally felt like that was actually the sun. So whatever yes. you've done, like with the colors and the stuff, the way it reflects, totally felt like it was real.
It's hard to look at the sun.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. It's super cool.
Yeah, and then you get some like vertigo or something, because like, no, that's not east, that's west. Yeah, that's yeah. not the sun coming yeah. up. No, it's a beautiful painting.
This is the Lewis and Clark Lake.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they approached me, I think I'm not sure how large of a picture they wanted, or mm-hmm. you know, mural. But when I saw the whole wall and the whole pizza oven in the background, and then you know, it's like, hey, yeah. Lewis and Clark Lake, this yeah. is our area, and so I wanted to personalize it all that way and yep. come up with what it is. I guess
it's beautiful. And if anyone's visited this area and has been on this part of the river, you recognize the cliff side, the mm-hmm. South Dakota side, mm-hmm. right away. You know mm-hmm. exactly where you're at and what yeah. you're looking at. So.
Yeah, I'm fortunate to live close to such a scenic area. What I paint is all surroundings, you know. Everything I paint is pretty much a half-hour drive away.
Yeah. When you were a kid, did you help on the farm?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And did you enjoy that, or?
Yeah.
Looking back on it, maybe enjoy it a little more.
Yeah. She's like, yeah.
You know, I that's the life. And yeah. I was in the middle of eight children, and my dad would call me his little farm girl, and that just inspired me to yeah. work harder. You know, yeah. I love nature, and even right now I should be painting some of the orders and things that people want me to do, but I'm spending all my time out in the garden these beautiful days, and it's yeah. spring, and we yeah. just and we're really into soil health and yeah. nutrition, and I want to grow my own food. And anyway, so sometimes I my priorities are elsewhere, but yeah. I keep busy. I have yeah. a gallery in my home and travel to a couple shows in the summer.
When did you yeah. decide that like artistry was your thing? Like, was that always part of growing up, or?
Yeah, I loved it always. I liked to draw, but, you know, growing up I had pretty much just pencil and paper and yeah. my crayons. But I will share the story quick.
Yeah,
when
please.
I was 2 and a half, I broke my leg.
Okay.
And I had a cast on my leg. And I remember a little brother, he would have been 1 and a half, he was taking the crayons, and I did not want him taking my crayons, and he'd break them. Well, it was his crayons, too. And I stuffed them down my cast so he couldn't get my crayons. And I guess when they took the cast off, I said to the doctor, there's my colors. But I just know how important,
yeah.
and I knew what those colors could do, and I loved it from little on. So always enjoyed it. I enjoy a lot of things, though. Yeah. You know, it's just fun to create stuff.
As far as business-wise, you know, with her art, I like to call it a hobby gone wild mm-hmm. a little bit. She started it for the love of it, and then we kind of turned it into a business.
Yeah. Are you able to, like, keep that, like, passion for it and stuff when you're doing it as a job, or, you know, as a specific request, as opposed to like something that just comes natural?
I thoroughly enjoy creating, and you know, I'll be, you know, and I do watercolor oils, and people will say, which one do you like better? And it's like, well, whatever I'm doing at the moment. And no matter what I, you know, if you're creating something in the moment, you're totally enjoying yourself. The only thing I don't care for is I can't fill everybody's requests. You know, everybody wants something, you know, and whether it's, you know, paint my barn, my house, my dog, my bridge, my church.
It has to excite her before she'll paint it.
Well, there's so many things I'm inspired to do a lot, but time, it takes time. So that's my only regret.
So was this mural, or was this the biggest, or have you done bigger things?
No.
Normally you just do like paintings?
Yeah, I paint on canvas, and paper in my home.
So this was a large request.
Oh, yes.
And how long did this take you?
It was COVID, and Joyce...
Yeah, she did it because of the person
Joyce.
Who asked.
I couldn't say no, plus I knew how awesome Doug and Juliet worked on this, you know,
this
with...
area.
I know, and it's like, well, this is something that will be enjoyed by so many. I love, like, prom time or whatever the event is. People have pictures posted on Facebook in front of this mural. It gives people joy. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's why you do anything, to give people joy. And with my artwork and going to shows, I always say the biggest thing is meeting people. It's the people. And I like to... Yeah. I think it's a great excuse to meet people.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as governing your time and doing what you enjoy. You really like to create. You said that a couple of times. Planting a garden or spending time on your yard, that's creating too.
Oh, yeah.
And Nebraska is one of these tricky states or areas where you get like 4 weeks like this out of the year, in the spring and in the fall, where you can enjoy sunrise to sunset, and we're right in the thick of it. So get out in the garden, enjoy it. Like, I'm on board. I think I'm moving to Crofton. They're going to bunk me up.
Hey, I already said that. So you're moving too?
We have a bunk in the shop.
Perfect.
We have a guest
There you go. I think what would make me so nervous about doing something like this, like you go through and you do all this beautiful work, and then I assume at the end you put your signature on it.
Yeah.
And I would be nervous right there. I'd be like, man, if I mess up this signature after all this work.
I started it and it's like, oh my God, I'm making this way too big, but I was doing it kind of in proportion to the picture. It's like my name's really plastered over there in the corner.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It looks great. I just, that would be where my head would be like, I've done all this work. This is so great. Now I'm going to screw up this little part right here.
Oh, and the 2020 date on there too. Yep. I got to put my date on here.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. And like you said, that was kind of right in that COVID time.
Oh, yeah, the COVID. You know, I'd get up, like, say, what time in the morning would the sun not be shining on it? And then I could paint until the sun started blaring on it.
Gotcha.
And then in the afternoon, I could go back. And, but I live 3 miles from here, so it was nice to go back and forth. But I do know crawling on that roof on a Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah.
To blot in whatever.
Hot roof.
No, it was actually a cloudy morning, but that's when it worked.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway.
What was the time frame from start to finish?
Oh, I did it in a couple of weeks, probably 2 weeks. I know homecoming was going on. I was painting when I could hear the homecoming parade.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you were going to say a couple months.
No, I worked on it diligently to get it done because we were also in harvest season. You know, harvest was... I did a little book of my timeline because that year I did the pizza oven and then I stopped. This is at my home. I can't remember.
See, and this is what I love about this style of living. You're talking about a time where everybody was just staying home, maybe drinking too much beer, you know, scrolling through, you know, YouTube videos or whatever. You actually got backlogged. You got asked to do a couple more chores on top of harvest. It's just amazing.
You know, we didn't have kids in school, and I didn't have a parent in a nursing home or dealing with any of that the really stressful things during COVID. That was really sad. Yeah. So for me, it was like free sailing to do whatever.
Yeah. Do you guys, you mentioned children, we touched on a little bit earlier, you guys have one child? Or?
Our daughter, we have two.
Two, okay.
We had our daughter, Jenna, and then when she was 2.5, we had our Brittany, and she lived 5 months, and then we had a sweet little Morgan that lived 3 months.
That's where the name connection is.
Yeah, I know. She was just as pretty as you, Morgan. But anyway, yeah, it was after that that Jeff just said, you know, start painting and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then so 6 years later, our son, we got brave again because we knew we had, it's a genetic thing. And they were born, our babies were born totally normal. We didn't know anything was wrong until our first one was 2 months old. Mm. And then we learned that it could happen again. It's an autosomal recessive called Wernicke-Hoffmann's disease or infantile spinal muscular atrophy. So their muscles slowly degenerated, but their brains were all there, and we could experience the joy of their short life, you know. So anyway, it seems like everybody's got a story. Everybody's got something, and whatever inspires you. But in life, you take the path you're dealt with and live on faith and go out there and do what inspires you.
So. But meanwhile, we have a daughter in Salt Lake City.
And our son is, and then we had this wonderful son born that was healthy, and he's in Rapid City. He just got married. Oh, cool. Our daughter has our first grandchild.
Oh.
I don't know if we were going to talk about the dam race at all.
Oh, we're going to get there. Oh.
We got plenty of time.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm trying to, you know, we're supposed to remember. We wanted to tell him we do have kids.
Yeah. Our daughter, she's a physician. She's an OBGYN in Salt Lake City, so she's got a busy life there with her husband and her little guy. And then our son.
Rapid City, South Dakota?
Yes. Our son's in Rapid City.
Those are two really cool areas.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Oh, my goodness.
Great to visit. Yeah.
So that's where we visit.
We're not complaining too much.
Yep. And they have great recreation areas also, you know, whatever you want to do. Both places. Biking, hiking.
Fishing.
Yes.
Both areas.
Fishing,
cool.
Yeah, nice. So I want to talk a little bit about the farm and kind of what you guys have going on with that. So today, your operation, what do you guys have there? Is it strictly crops? Do you have livestock? How's that set up?
Okay, so I'll divide it into, you know, we do have crops. Probably a third of the farm is to crops grown for seed production.
Okay.
You know, oats and peas and even soybeans. And then we usually have cattle on the farm year-round, but we don't own any right now. Mm-hmm. I'll run cow-calf pairs for a friend in the summertime. And then as a result of the crops we grow a lot of cover crops. So we'll graze cattle on the crop ground all winter long.
Nice.
Then wildlife also loves it.
And that's a big attraction for
deer in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Is the cover crops we have out there. So
so the farming operation, when you guys started, were you always in like this regenerative mindset, or is that something that's come about more lately, or it's kind of developed over time?
Good question.
You know, it started as an economic necessity, you know, that I went into no-till and everything and tried to learn everything I could about it.
That was over 30 years ago.
Yeah. Probably 10 years ago is when it came on our radar. You know, I got involved with conservation statewide and things, and I got to realize that a lot of the things we were doing weren't sustainable, and it kind of led me down the path of how can I farm that's more perpetuate itself.
Yeah.
You know, and the more diverse we get, it's just exciting how, you know, our inputs have went down and we can grow all this cool stuff. And it just makes farming more exciting.
It does feel sometimes like conventional farming methods, like you just kind of feel like you're eventually going to run out. It's like you got a tank of fuel and it's eventually going to run out. Like it's a race to nowhere. And that kind of feels like that's what you're talking about, is that you wanted to feel more like every single step you're taking is actually building this thing up and helping with the next step, as opposed to kind of using it. Does that make sense?
Right. Mm-hmm. We've gone from becoming an extraction business to something that we think can perpetuate itself, understand the natural cycle. It was working awesome before we got here.
Right.
As you know, before we came to this land, it was a very productive system. You know, can we mimic that?
Yeah.
some way that you know.
Yeah. So we're back to trying to build the soil, you know, health of the soil, which is...
We've gotten interested in biology, and Jolene's even taken courses on, you know, trying to understand it and how we can incorporate it into what we do.
Absolutely. And for you guys, it was like one good thing led to another, because like you mentioned it real quick there, the fallout to doing cover crops and things like that. You track a lot of deer, pheasants, turkeys, and if you're an outdoorsman... that's what you want.
And in, you know, in some of the harshest times of the winter, we have, my memory is always going to be waking up one morning, we have a window that looks out east over the bottom, and there was some cover crop under the snow there.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only thing green in the neighborhood that time of the year. There was deep snow, and we counted there was 52 deer laying within probably 100 yards of our bedroom.
Interesting. Yeah, there's so many benefits, and a couple questions that I have for you about it, but just a note, on the way up here, we're driving up here, we've got about a three-hour drive, and of course we're driving through a lot of farm country, and we have recently got a couple pretty heavy rains where we're at, a little further south. I don't know if you guys have had that up here, but as we were coming up, you know, everyone's kind of in planting mode, so the fields are very barren, and I'm just seeing the runoff, all like the fields, everything has trenches cut in it all down the... throughout the terraces.
You won't see that at our farm.
Right, and you look at that, and you just inherently know something's wrong there. And it's certainly having a negative effect on the farmer's income and everything else that goes along with it. But yet we still continue to do it. But when you talk about the cover crops and those kinds of things, those are some of the things that you're trying to prevent or that you're helping with, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So what's exciting is, and you're talking about this runoff, and that is one of the major problems. We've been able to document you can increase infiltration by 10 times. I mean, that's not the natural way that water runs off. It's meant to infiltrate.
Yeah,
and come out as groundwater.
Yeah,
that's how our streams should be fed. So it's been eye opening, and when you see those ruts, you know, as far as that'll probably work for a lifetime, but you know, we have to be thinking generations ahead.
Yeah,
you know, how long will we be able to stay in that kind of soil loss?
For sure.
And I'm sure you know probably better than most. I mean, I've seen some projections. It's like 50 years is what we got left, or 200 years is what we got left. You know, depending if you're in Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, and what you've been doing. But there's, like you said, Ben, there is a finite timeline. If you're going to keep doing it this way, you're going to run out. Your topsoil is leaving you every year.
Look at the hills, and the hills are all a nice little tan color. And all the topsoils.
They estimate naturally soil can be produced like, I believe it's a half inch every, is it 50 years? Oh, now I shouldn't even brought that up, because all I know is it's a half inch compared to the acceptable soil loss right now is like 5 ton. And all we can expect every year you can produce a half inch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if we're losing 5, that's not going to work. But what we're finding out is you can speed up that soil, actually producing soil.
I mean, but don't you find most people are, well, is it most? People aren't forward thinking like you guys, right? They're just in the now. They're not thinking about generations after. I mean, you want more people to be doing that. But as you said, Ben, you saw what's going on. Is that because they're just doing what they need to do, or is it the money? Like, is it hard to educate? Like, where is the fallout? Like, where are people not doing that?
It's tough financially, and when everything is that tight, there's the fear of if I change, then I'm really going to go down the tubes.
It's been working, you know.
You really have to have faith that in the end it's going to pay off.
Okay.
I feel like these conversations typically get into like an us versus them scenario, and that's not really what it is.
And I don't want it to be.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and a lot of people, they've got their equipment, they got their practices have been working.
Yeah.
And they're very successful. Yeah. It's to make that change.
I think a lot of it too is like the industry influence.
Yes.
Like, you know, what is telling farmers what they should be doing, how you should be doing it. You need bigger equipment. You need more horsepower. You need all of these things to do all this stuff if you're going to make it. You need to be farming mass acres and...
Definitely.
You know, and it's, and that, I mean, that's the story that's constantly being told.
So what I've been trying to tell is our story is we've raised a family on 500 acres without, other than the first few years, without an outside job. And I've had to doc, you know, the one thing I had in college was business, and I'm trying to document it and go, here's how the numbers work, you know. You have to give back a little bit.
Sure.
On some years, on some fields, but, you know, in the end, it'll come back.
Yeah.
And it'll be profitable.
And we don't want to have to depend on government insurance.
And I do all my analysis without government assistance.
Imagine that.
I don't, how many more podcasts do we want to do today?
right. Real quick, Andy, before we go any longer, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Right on.
All right, folks, listen up. This episode is brought to you by Barn Owl. We're talking barnowl.tech. Barn Owl brings us cameras, remote cameras, surveillance cameras, cameras you can use to monitor your property, monitor your herd, monitor your roads, monitor anything you want to monitor for that matter. Wireless, cellular connected, possibility to have solar panels hooked up just like we do out here at the farm, never have to worry about batteries. We use these things for game cams. We use these to monitor in and out activity at our farm, get notifications on our phones. We can set those notifications, photos, videos, all of the above. They work great. They're super nice to have. They've come in handy for us a number of times, and I know they can for you as well. If you own a property that you want some surveillance on, no matter where it's at on the property, Barn Owl's the way to go. Or even if you're just looking for something to use at home, around the home, or even as your game cam like we do. Works perfect. Check them out, barnowl.tech. They've got a discount code for you. It's farm-focused, all one word, F-A-R-M-F-O-C-U-S-E-D. 10% off just for listening to the Common Folk Podcast. Barnowl.tech, code farm-focused, 10% off of any of these cameras, any of their bundles. We've enjoyed them so far. We really enjoy working with them. They're veteran-owned and operated out of Colorado. Good folks, good company. Been great to talk to, so happy to move forward with them and work with a number of their products going forward. Happy to offer this to you guys as well. Barnowl.tech, code FARMFOCUSED, 10% off. Check them out. Do us a favor. Thanks. All right, we're back. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about regenerative, like if you could quickly recap it, like if you're going to tell somebody, all right, if you're considering adopting regenerative practices, what are the basic steps that you would do all throughout the year, and what would be the first couple things that you would recommend that you would take on first?
Well, first, you know, try to find a mentor, and you might have to look across the whole state for that, but you have to incorporate a lot of the tools together. You know, I can say, okay, try to plant a cover crop in mm-hmm. the fall. Try to get that into your system.
Basically, the six principles are nice to know. And cover, keeping the ground covered, reducing tillage, have a living root.
Living root as long as possible, yeah. And so, you know, you start with a cover crop, but, you know, to really accelerate regeneration of soil, if you can have a different crop in there, like a spring crop, mm-hmm. and then diversity is what we're looking for. So where you can grow 12 different plants on a field in a year's time that get actually to maturity. If you can figure out, with cattle, you can do it. You know, that's how you can speed it up. If it has to be in corn and beans, if the banker won't let you do anything else, it's, yeah, simply try to incorporate cover crop in the fall to get started. The improvement isn't going to be as fast.
Mm-hmm.
If you can jumpstart the system, like I was saying, with a multi-species cover crops, like say after an oats or a wheat crop, I'm trying to document this, but you know, in 6 years' time, can you become profitable?
Yeah.
Doing it that way. By
so
having
that's kind of the goal, is that it takes 6 years to run through this?
Right now, that's how I'm running numbers.
Yeah.
With what we're doing, it's kind of hard to explain it all now. Yeah. But I'm trying to decide year one, you're going to probably lose some income.
Uh-huh.
Because you've not planted corn and beans in one of the fields, you know.
Yep.
It quickly, you get excited because you see the improvement.
Yeah.
And then it quickly snowballs into all the ones I don't have weed, insect pressure, disease pressure, and I'm saving on all these inputs, and I'm growing my major crops way cheaper.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes from.
The additional things that you grow outside of like corn and beans, is there things that you grow that you sell?
Peas.
Yes. Well, I sell a lot of oats for seed.
Okay.
We grow, and this is a traditional oats growing area. Uh-huh. You know, oats does fairly well here.
You're certified seed.
Yeah, so I'm in Crop Improvement Association. So that makes that work. So I'm saying, you know, if that's something you don't want to do, at least grow up for forage. You know, right now the livestock industry is doing fairly well. So if you can grow up for forage to incorporate another crop, so that you can somehow get diversity in there.
That seems like that's part of the problem where we're at, is that, like, you know, we don't have cattle where we're mm-hmm. at. Really, very few people have cattle.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem, and that's that's definitely part of the equation. It's a big part of the equation, right?
Right.
So that, and then when I ask about those other crops, what I mean is, like, our system, especially where we're at, and you guys probably experience it here, is geared for beans and corn.
Right.
I mean, if a farmer's growing something else, they don't have anywhere to sell it, you know, unless they want to run to right. Kansas or something like that.
So nothing's easy.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to start your marketing before you grow it. But right now I have friends down there south of the Platte now, and they're actually planting irrigated ground to grazing.
Wow.
There's where you get your multi-species.
Yeah.
There's where you get the rumen accelerates the biological
Yeah.
change. You run it through a rumen and you put that back out there, and it's all staying out there.
Yep.
And that's what they're doing as their extra crop.
And something that I've noticed is with cattle guys, you know, ranchers, a lot of times they'll take on more cattle than they have ground for. Mm-hmm. So if you do pull the trigger, have a little faith and do a cover crop,
yes.
I bet you can find a rancher that'd be like, hey, I could run some cattle on that for you. You know, but
sure.
You got to take that step, you know, and not assume, but maybe hope.
Yeah.
And there's probably ways to go ahead and forecast for that. You know,
like I said, it's not easy, and you got to get outside your comfort zone a little bit. But you have to keep those principles in mind. You know, can I keep the soil covered and have the diversity out there and something growing at all time? Like you said, fields are brown now.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, our farm was almost, you should have went past our place.
We might have to.
It was pretty much all green. I'm burning some things down this week to plant summer crops, but.
Okay. I've got one more question about that, and then I want to ask something else that I think you guys are passionate about. But one of the things I hear about, you talk about tillage. Like, tillage is a, you know, a big, like, controversial topic back and forth. You know, some folks say, nope, it's, you don't need it. We've proven it. And some folks say, no, I've tried it. There's no way I can farm without it. One of the things that I've heard is, and you know, different parts of the country are going to, the soils are different and, you know, the rainfall is different and those kinds of things. One of the biggest scenarios I've heard is, you know, a little bit further north of us where they have like a high water table. They can't get rid of water, you know, probably because of part of their practices, their soil's tough. And they have to put in drain tile, you know, tiling systems, and they have to till or else the ground is just too wet. It won't dry, these types of things.
Right.
What's the scenario there?
Are you,
go ahead. I know you need the aggregates in the soil. You need to build up that structure of the soil so it can absorb all the water.
The biology forms the structure. So what's happened is you have a broken water cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So, water is not infiltrating down like it's supposed to. Okay, so you're using tillage. Tillage perpetuates more tillage.
Mm.
You're not fixing it. You're just.
But
just,
a good rain compacts that soil, and then the next rain, it all runs off.
And then it's having the root in the ground all the time.
And these guys, like, I go to their farms and I see them, and, you know, you get up in, like, into Minnesota, you know, it's a land of 10,000 lakes, and there's ponds and lakes and water right. everywhere.
Yeah.
And their drain tile systems, like, you can walk up to it, and it's like a running stream almost all the time. So they definitely have a lot of water in the ground, but, you know, I'm just curious kind of what you're...
Yeah. And I hate, you know, no-till by itself will not work forever.
Mm-hmm.
You need that cover crop and diverse crops in the system
sure.
to yep. make yep. to make even that work. It's just sadly we're forcing a two crop summer system down the throat of Mother Nature.
Yeah.
So we've lost the soil structure what was naturally, and you know granted I'm sure some of these areas were probably more wetland at the time,
mm-hmm.
but what I've noticed is we put some tiles on parts of our farm. Because they were wet, and they're no longer wet, but the tiles don't run either.
So the ground's just holding.
So it's mm-hmm. well, it's also a sign that it's doing the normal recharge of the aquifer.
Oh sure, yep.
It's back to the normal cycle. First, we were just trying to take the excess water within 3 feet of the surface
yep.
out.
Yep.
Well, now all at once the tiles don't run, but we have such good structure that we can farm it normally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I could put a plug on the end of that tile and
you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that takes me to what I wanted to talk to you about next. I think you guys are pretty passionate about water and nitrates in the water system and things like that.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that or what you guys are working on with that.
Yeah. So that's a complicated subject, yeah. and I'm on the natural resource districts for that also. There was always nitrate in the system, but it was in a tight loop
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, that wasn't going down to the aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you see black ground in the spring or the fall, that is potential for nitrate to mineralize and get into the groundwater. And it can be irregardless if fertilizer or not. I mean, it's naturally the system needs to have live roots in it to cycle that nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really tough to fix the problem by just putting on less fertilizer if all we are is corn and beans.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done research on that on our farm. Once you have something that's not growing, the nitrogen mineralizes. And if you have excess moisture, it's going to get below the root zone. And, you know, they do a lot of research on that.
Into the water streams.
Yeah. Diverse cropping system with cover crops and just reduce that fertility would go a long way
mm-hmm.
to fixing that. But
I feel like I've only heard about this problem and, like, the state doing anything about it in Iowa. Like, I think they made some pretty strong moves from some of the stuff that I've heard. Do we have a problem here in Nebraska?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a community near yeah. Lynch where they just straight up say, do not drink your groundwater for these couple of weeks because it's springtime. And I mean,
yeah. All the runoff.
Oh my gosh. And I'm just thinking, this is one of the most beautiful areas to me on the planet.
Yeah.
And you're told, don't drink the water because it's contaminated.
And we sit on the continent's largest aquifer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we have
the large, by far the largest part of the Ogallala.
Yeah.
We have 80% of it probably as far as volume goes. And yeah, but you know, the problem is in the surface,
mm-hmm.
close to the surface,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as the nitrates go. Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't want to throw anybody under the bus. You got it, like you were saying, it's not a us versus them type of
right,
thing.
Right,
sure.
Yeah, it's education.
So
yeah.
right now, this yeah. is what we have to do to make a living, you know, the way we're farming now. And, you know, the NRDs have been working on this for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to turn around the Titanic.
Yeah.
There's legacy nitrate. I mean, we can understand how old the nitrate is. There's no high nitrate water older than, like, when you go to, like, pre-50s.
Okay.
They can time-date groundwater. So they know it's a result of farming practices,
yep.
you know, the nitrate.
Yep.
But And then it's tough.
Well, as you said, yeah. I mean, we've got to feed people. We've got to we need the food, the fiber, and the fuel. We've just got to people have got to get educated and figure out how do we get some of these things under control. I feel like, not to say like there's any bad guys in this scenario, but you know, it's kind of a group effort. But there's big powers that be that are pushing a lot of things that they make a lot of money off of and don't want to see go away. Mm-hmm. And it makes it very hard for people to understand what they should and shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. It's a big part of it. You know, if you look at farmer margin over the last 50 years, it's stayed really thin, but the gross income, the gross is steadily gone up and up and up. So it's the input. It's a huge part of agriculture is the input side of it.
To that point, like I feel like every time these conversations come up, people are talking about the farmers. They're blaming the farmers. And sure, the farmers are applying this stuff, but in a lot of cases, they're doing what they're being instructed to do. And in a lot of cases, they don't have a lot of good choices either. And as you said, like the amount of money that just gets shuffled through a farm, you know, that the farm never gets to take to the bank. Mm-hmm. Is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the millions and millions of dollars. Yeah.
So, like on our farm, we've documented, you know, we've cut back on inputs, and this is just the variable inputs, from $150 to $250 an acre. Mm. All you need is equal yields or less, and it becomes very profitable.
Sure.
Then.
Yeah. Well, this is something that I could talk about for a long time, but we're going to run out of time. Andy and I spent a little time in this industry years ago. This is how we met. We worked for a company as a dealer selling soil biologicals. So running around in the area, and we had a lot of training on that and just trying to help folks understand you've got to work on the biological life and where you can save inputs because of these and so on and so forth. So it was a part of our life for a number of years, and it's very interesting.
It really was. And you could see a lot of the positives that came from that. But like you said, it's not easy, and you got to sink your teeth into it. Yep. You can't expect a big old profit margin in year one. Mm-hmm. And also, you can't be scared to dial back over here. You know, I mean, it's very nerve-wracking.
So what I will say, you have to start with the mindset that I'm going to make this work. I'm not going to see if it works. Mm. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it work. You have to have that mindset. So.
And everybody wants a weed-free field.
Yeah, yeah, you got to look pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you...
But that isn't us, necessarily.
Yeah. As we move on to the next topic in this conversation, is there anywhere, like folks who are listening to this who want to learn more about this, where would you recommend they go, or is there some kind of contact that you have, or what would be best to just kind of get the thinking going?
Should we start saying names of podcasts and YouTube? Yeah. You know, we
kind of search that.
So, you know, Green Cover, really.
I work a lot with Green Cover, if you know the Burns Brothers.
Okay.
And that's where I actually grow quite a bit of seed for them. They have a connection with tremendous amount of people that are, you know, trying to get the regenerative part up and going.
So maybe look that up.
Yeah. Boy, you just Google things. I mean,
I think we started with Gabe Brown.
Definitely the Gabe Brown story.
Yep.
You know, the biological side. She actually, if you know Elaine Ingham, okay, she was a biology professor or whatever that she basically taught us what is actually there.
Yeah,
she started the soil health school.
But food, as far as, that really connects with farmers, I like what Green Cover does.
Okay.
And right now I should be thinking of, you know.
The Christine Jones and the Nicole
and
Masters.
And universities.
Is there state resources, for people to check out?
Yeah.
But universities are still funded.
They're very specialized.
Yeah.
So, the universities are very specialized in their research, and it's tough to nail down the system approach that way. So, they're great to go to learn basic things. But if you can find what Green Cover has is the network of farmers across the country that are seeing success. And he just today he sent me a name of a guy in Kansas that's interested, and they sent him some of my webinars, and hey, if you want to connect with this guy, he's really interested. So it's kind of it's a nation network that he's kind of started. So
that's Green Cover Seed, right? Isn't
yeah.
that what they're called?
Green Cover is their name.
Okay.
And they dropped Seed off.
But okay. So just Green Cover now.
If you go on YouTube and put in Green
Check
Cover.
That up, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You'd love to interview them. They're in Bladen, awesome. Nebraska.
Okay. Yeah. Hmm. I've definitely heard of them, but not
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Good deal. So moving on to the next topic, we're up here in Crofton. What brought us up here and got us familiar with the area and the folks is the dam race. And you guys seem to be pretty involved with that. Behind us in the camera shot here, folks can see the kayak that you guys built. Is that right?
Yep.
When
it's a kit, but I still put it all together, and
it looks
it's
great.
A stitch and
it's
glue,
beautiful.
And yeah, all this sanding and finishing and whatever.
You guys compete?
Big project.
Or you guys participate in the event with this kayak?
Yeah.
So who kayaks? Who does? You do.
Jeff does the total
Jeff does.
Triathlon.
I do the triathlon, so I use this kayak. And then if it works for other people to use it, it depends on the timing.
Sure, yeah.
I
every
participate
5 minutes,
on
a
way. Team, so yeah. my teammate will run the kayak.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I just do the bike portion.
No, that's awesome, yeah.
The kayak started.
I think that's the hard part.
Yeah, pretty tough.
It started with the one of the first years I was in the race, and there's a picture of me in the water with my 11-foot kayak, and all you see is a body sticking out of the water. I need something that gets on top of the water a little more. So.
Yeah, I last year was the first year we participated in it, and we teamed up, and I did the kayak portion. And I was running one of the, Game and Parks kayaks.
Oh, sure.
And I would be afraid to take that thing out because it's a little too pretty. Like, we were playing bumper cars.
Oh.
We were smashing each other. There was some craziness going on. I didn't tip over, so that was good, but.
It's really tough. That's got a fiberglass hull on it. Okay. It weighs about 45 pounds.
Well, one year, my team member flipped it. Or what did? No, he just lost an oar for a bit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sorry. How long have you guys been participating in the dam race?
Every year.
And how long has it been? We were asking that earlier, but Heidi had walked out of the room.
We thought Heidi would know.
Yeah.
Eight years.
Okay.
This is our eighth year.
8 years.
So.
Yeah, I was trying to remember all the colored T-shirts that I had.
You have eight different colors?
Yeah, eight different colors.
I've been doing it long enough where I've reached another age bracket.
Yeah.
So.
is that like kind of something that you guys have always been into as far as like physical challenges and things like that, or was it just something that came around town and you're like, man, we want to support that?
Oh, anything that this group from Crofton organized, we're gonna support it.
Yep.
For sure. We've always biked, biked, and I've run a few 5Ks.
We run
5Ks. You have, Jeff. If it was a Crofton activity, I remember way back when the centennial year we did that bike ride going to Niobrara and back.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that was...
Yeah. This is our incentive to get busy.
Yeah.
If it's in your mind that the end of the July we have this awesome event that you don't want to make a fool out of yourself,
yeah,
that's what gets you out of bed in the morning and do something. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For the organizers to come up with this event, how could you not want to participate in some way?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how often do you guys take this out and practice?
Oh, the kayak, not as often as our bicycles.
Yeah, we have smaller kayaks that we'll actually
they're easier
kayak
to
with.
Haul around.
This one's hard to get around.
I was going to make another one, and that didn't happen yet. So, anyway.
Yeah, we'd need a trailer. So we don't use it too often.
Yeah.
Actually.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
But it's...
There again, during COVID, you're just inspired to come up with things, and it was a good thing to do.
But it works good. I mean, I've done enough kayaking in my time to know that it's...
Oh, and it's almost like you guys have a nice little nudge here, and being physically fit and jogging, biking, whatever, it's good for your body, period. You get a better life, right?
For sure.
Right.
Standard of living. But then you have these beautiful trails on all these parks, whether it's... Park here, Niobrara State Park, it would almost be a crime not to use those trails. And they're just right here for you. So yeah. I think that would be a nice little nudge, I think, for a lot of folks.
Yeah. We're used to our daughter and son-in-law in Salt Lake City. Yeah. I mean, every street seems like they have a bike lane there. It's, you know, it's just such a great culture.
You know.
And I wish we had more.
I like to go fast. I like to get on a road where I can go faster. And it's really tough. There's not enough trails around here, so unfortunately we do have to do a lot of road biking. We have like hybrid gravel bikes that they work fairly good on gravel, but
you mentioned the trails and stuff. That's part of what the dam race is doing, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about? Do you know much about that? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we sure hope so. You get Heidi and Johnny over here, and they'll tell you what's going on there. But we really, really need more trails. And to connect the lake to Crofton would be so
the connecting
awesome.
And I know that's hard to do in private country to get a longer, if you could just make the highways a little more friendly for biking, you know. Mm-hmm.
More of a shoulder, and people aren't looking for cyclists on the road either.
But, you know, one goal could be if you improve the trails in the parks. Like, we can go to Yankton, South Dakota, and we can do 35 miles of trail without – you don't want to see the same thing over and over on the same ride, you know. You know, you want some interest.
Yeah.
Our bikes have radars on the back, you know, lights, and you can tell when somebody's coming up on you without turning your head to look around. So we try to be as safe as we can, but we do get on the highways a lot.
We do a lot of road biking.
Sure. Yeah.
And you need to
know. The gravel roads.
You probably need to know what you're doing.
I'd imagine, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely don't do that.
I thought when you said you like to go fast, I thought you were speaking more of my language, a bike with a motor on it. Yeah. It's kind of my speed.
Yeah.
Those aren't allowed at the race.
Can we make a little stipulation, Heidi?
Well, for me? I think you can ride an e-bike in it. The only thing is you're not going to be a part of the...
Yeah, I was looking at the website, and it'd be a good time to point folks to that, Crofton's with an S, Dam Race, .com. And they had the different races you can sign up for, and there was one in here that said Dam Race E-Bike Triathlon.
Oh, no. Yeah.
What about, that's yours, Andy.
What about Harley Sportster?
You won't get
Harley
a trophy.
Sportster, is that on there anyway?
There's no Harley races in here, but...
And if you could be in front of me and draft me?
Yeah, they go real fast.
Folks, definitely check out the website. As we said, that's... what brought us up here and got us familiar with the area. We got a chance to participate in it last year. We had a great time. Come down here to the Haymarket, you know, at the end, have a awesome Bloody Mary, some cool local beers, some great chicken sandwiches. I mean, just good event. A lot of good camaraderie.
You knew all the families that gathered up their kids and the grandpas or whatever that are involved, and they might have a family team, and it's just wonderful to see. So we went through how many years of seeing all these families getting together and having fun. And last year, we were married 40 years, and our daughter in Salt Lake City's like, oh, I just can't come home for just anything, you know. But I'm like, for our anniversary, my request is for you to come home and for the dam race weekend. Yeah, so.
And she did?
Yeah, she did. And our son came home. He was on my team. He did the kayak part. But Jenna decided she was going to do the triathlon. So it's like, oh, yeah, you go for it, girl.
Nice.
And so they bike all the time. Mm-hmm. And she started running enough to not make a fool of herself. But can I brag a little bit about how Jenna did?
Here we go.
She ended up winning the overall women's.
Oh, right.
Holy cow.
And she placed 5th out of all the triathlons.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
4 guys beat her.
So now she has to come back, right?
She
has to come back.
She don't know.
This year, they do these Belgium waffle rides, and they're traveling all over the country. They'll be in Canada on the 4th of July. So it's just hard to get.
They do have a benefit where they're always training at altitude.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh, she thinks it's probably easy here then.
Well, Alex did the bike portion. But first he rode his bike to Yankton, went to Muddy Moe's for coffee, and then he showed up at the lake, and then he rode into Crofton, and then he rode back to get his son from the babysitter.
Rode into Crofton for the race.
Unfortunately, there's not enough competition. So, he did win the bike
portion. So, you know, It's fun when you see family come home for the event.
Oh, it's so, that was so
wonderful.
And
when we bike through the summer, well, we'll wear these shirts a lot. So you get people interested from, then they'll look it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, from Omaha and everything that don't have to swim.
Yeah, that's the great part.
It is. So we, Morgan's sister's husband, so our brother-in-law, he's into these kinds of things. He loves the physical fitness and the biking and the challenges and all that. And he's been wanting to do a triathlon all the time, but he just is not a swimmer. And he's like, man, I just can't get out there and do the swimming. Yeah. Then this came about. So he came last year and competed, did the whole event himself. He did great. I don't remember what he I think he placed fairly high. But it's perfect because, like you said, no swimming, the kayak thing was perfect for him.
And you know what? The competition, yeah, that's great. But I love seeing the just participating, doing it. And there's well, I'm never going to do the triathlon, I don't think. But sure. I'm amazed at who puts out for the triathlon just to say they did it. Yeah. And they are having fun. There's so many great stories, I'm sure. I just think of Kyle Stevens when, you know, he did the kayak part, but he has a disability.
Oh, yeah,
he can't do the bike
ride. Yep, we heard about him.
How awesome is that to see him involved?
Yeah, able to participate.
And, gosh, when you're a lady that was how many months pregnant, it's like, really, you're doing the triathlon?
Stop her. Yep, don't stop it.
And some of the ages, you know, gosh, I remember the 1 year a friend of ours was doing a cold turkey coming in there, but he beat the 75-year-old lady that was, and we tease him that, well, at least you beat, so-and-so came to show up and accomplish such a great thing. And honestly, gosh, you go, I just do the bike portion, but along the road, all the volunteers that are handing out water and along the way, that ride goes so fast. Yeah. And it's, well, you know what I'm talking about. And they just make it so fun. And, of course, to get here at the Pulley Museum, it's just
did you bike
a party.
It? I did the kayaking.
Oh, you did the kayak.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
My wife did the biking.
On our team.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And, yeah, that was a pretty stout. I was coaching. I helped coach.
who ran?
Morgan.
Oh, yeah. Morgan. Awesome. Good. I'll look for you this year.
Okay. I'll be running.
Yeah, you'll be back, right?
Yeah.
Great.
And
awesome.
The brother's coming back, right?
He's doing, he's coming back as well. Yep.
Yeah, I think we're having two teams. Because Andy and Ashley, are you guys having that, right?
Yeah, we'll see.
Either way,
we're planning on coming back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We like to do this Nebraska ride called Tour de Nebraska. And there, it's fun. We're recruiting people there. We like to show up there and then wear our Dam Race shirts. Mm-hmm. And then all at once, there's other people wearing Dam Race shirts because they participated.
Yeah. So I think you guys kind of touched on it. Like, just the term triathlon sounds really, like, overwhelming or, you know, scary. And I think that's what a lot of people think when they hear about it, but that's not the case.
Well,
it's pretty low-key. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of camaraderie.
Right. They spread it out. You never feel crowded.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, like if you're running down the road, or especially the biking, you know, it's nothing.
Nobody's ever in your way, really.
Yeah. It's not like being in a Peloton.
It's so organized. Yeah.
It is very
even
organized.
Other triathlons, I've talked to people that do the swimming part and they all start at once and they're all splashing and drowning each other.
Yeah.
And the kayaks, the heats are kind of fun when they start out. It might be a little crowded, but it's everybody finds their place.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and there's such good stories. The 1 year I actually wiped out, it was windy.
Yeah.
And I forgot my water bottle. I was talking and I was drinking, you know, so much water, so I didn't have all that weight. You know, I was planning my strategy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I forgot it. So here I'm on the road going, darn, I don't want to stop. So I was just grabbing the cups as they were going by, and they were having fun doing that, seeing if I could grab it, you know. And I was doing really well until I turned south into Crofton, and there was a wind.
Mm.
And I feel like that's what I was drinking.
She's biking
water.
Down the road, tipping a cup of glass of water.
Yeah. And I wiped out right
there. She wiped out.
And my niece is a PNA. PA, and she was working there, and she felt my joints and looked at my bike tires, and I was bound to get on with the race. I was 7 miles out, and I got on, and my legs worked. They were good, but it turned out I had broken ribs.
Oh, really?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And
oh, my gosh.
But
really?
That's one of my stories. 1 year I got a flat tire, but, you know, there's stories along
the
way.
You powered through, and you're coming back.
Yeah, the whole rib thing. It's too bad when you're in shape and then you got to lay around for 6 weeks. But yeah, anyway.
I feel like, you know, all these conversations that we're having are all fairly similar in terms of like your guys' mentality. When we talk about, you know, fitness and challenging yourselves as a human being, that plays into the things that you're talking about the farm fields, you know, and the fitness of the soil and challenging that and working on, not working on the end, not just focusing on the end product, working on everything it takes to achieve that end product, which is your health and which is the health of your fields and your plants and so on and so forth. So mm-hmm. I think what I take from it big time is just that mentality of it's a long ride and you gotta get ready for that. You gotta buckle in for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I talk about this with Morgan, with our kids. We're such a society of like, we need it right now. We need that end result. If we can't get that end result tomorrow, or if we can't look it up on our phone real quick and get the end result, we don't want it. But all of these things that we're talking about require a commitment mm-hmm. and an effort and thoughtfulness. Mm-hmm. And that's what you guys are doing. It's inspiring to see.
It's finding joy in the journey.
100%. Yeah.
And I'm just so glad that in our small town of Crofton, we have an event like this, that people work so hard to allow us to have this kind of fun. And and the goal of getting in shape and participating. I mean, what a great event. But,
and this event puts a limelight on what you're talking about, Ben, taking the focus away from the short-term gains mm-hmm. and the big picture, ties it all in together. Morgan, I know you trained. Ashley trained a long time on mm-hmm. her bike. So, and then she got in shape. She was feeling better. She could go 4 miles and 5 miles and 7 miles. You know, so like it's the journey, like you were saying. And that so far outpaces the short-term gains of just, you know, fly by night, buy a video console or whatever it is, you know.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, and I've learned to totally enjoy biking. I don't know about running. That's something I tolerate. But it's just not work to get in shape if, you know, we enjoy it so much. It's our pastime right now. It's
awesome.
And what's
instead
great,
of a camper, we can just hop on a bike. It's simple.
And this is an annual event. Yeah. So you can participate 1 year and go, well, next year I'm going to work a little harder or I'm going to get, you know, I'll get these people together, bring more to, you know, bring more in.
Yeah.
And
100%. I'll coach even harder this year, you guys.
Yeah. Wait.
You gotta participate.
Well, it's been fun speaking with you guys. It's cool to see you know, some of the stories and the faces behind the race and just locals and some of the unique stuff that people are doing. We call the podcast Common Folk because we consider people like you common folk. What we say is that we want to talk to regular people that are doing super cool things, and a lot of what you guys are doing nobody knows about, but you continue to do it, and that's the common folk. Those are the people that we're talking to, so we appreciate you guys for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to meet you guys. You guys got anything else, any questions or anything?
I don't.
No?
I mean, I all these smells are happening here.
Man, it's about time to eat.
Let's do it.
You got anything more?
No, this is great. It's so nice to meet you guys.
Thanks so much. You guys are a real joy to spend time with here.
Well, we appreciate you guys. Well, let's get some pizza, man.
Let's do it.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Later.